We gotta spread this stuff around. Let's put it on the internet.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Great heavens! What kind of radio show is this?
All right, now we have a special guest here. I didn't want to announce him ahead of time in case something happened, but we have a special guest. I'm bringing him on the deck right now. There you go. But all of America listeners know him well. He is the extreme explorer, Adam Davies, a dear, dear, dear friend of the program. I consider him, he's one of those guests who's been on a million times. He's like a brother to me. You know, I think folks know that. There's sort of a cadre of BOA regulars who have made appearance after appearance after appearance, and that's just because, you know, I love them so much. They're such great folks and such interesting people. And somebody actually had mentioned to me the other day how much they enjoyed hearing Adam on the show, and that led me, as I mentioned to Adam when I caught up with him, is it, this is going to be like a soap opera, like Facebook, which I hate, it like filters all of the people you know. So if I hadn't looked at a post of Adam's in a while, it, somehow it like moves him to the back of the line. It's just like, put everybody's shit on at once. I don't care, Facebook. Just put, this is why I'm friends with them. So I was saying to myself, well, I wonder what Adam's been up to. So I'm like, went to his page and saw that he has had an experience here with the coronavirus. And I thought what made his post particularly interesting was that he said he had been messaged twice by people who have been dealing with individuals who claim that COVID-19 is a conspiracy theory, and that inspired him to make this post and talk about his experience. So I thought to myself, I only know one person who's even been tested, and they had no symptoms. They were fine. So I don't even know anyone who's really been touched by this. But Adam, as he says here, he was diagnosed as very probable for COVID-19, and I assume to be diagnosed that must mean that you're dealing with some shit. So I wanted to get him on the show, talk about this a little bit, because I think maybe I have a hard time believing people listening to this show don't think that this is real. But for anybody who's on the fence, I mean, you know Adam Davies, folks, so maybe we can put a face, in a sense, to all this. So, Adam, I really appreciate you coming on the show and talking about this. You know, as you said, there are some people who – what was the way you described it? Only those who are married to their sister can truly believe that this is all fake. But maybe we can convince those colorful individuals. So welcome back to the show, Adam, under very strange circumstances. I appreciate you doing this.
No, of course, Tim. It's good to be here. Obviously, this is very strange, as you say. But I like coming on your show, and you know, we met up obviously in San Diego when you came down last year. So we are good friends, and I'm happy to be here.
Well, like I said, with your post, and hopefully this appearance here, you can maybe do some good. I mean, you know, what the hell happened? much the same as I asked you with the Bigfoot portal. What have you gotten yourself into now, Adam? What happened? What happened led to this turn of events?
Oh, I've been all over since I last spoke to you, Alaska. I made a film there, and I've just released my new book. Well, I could go on, but that isn't what this is about today. So it's difficult to say exactly where I got COVID-19. I was in Washington State, certainly, but I also I'm about out and about in San Diego, and there were some cases diagnosed here too. So I can't tell you exactly where I got it. I am diagnosed as highly probable. And there's an important point. I was listening, obviously, to you guys talking just then, and there's a few points I'd make. The first point is that we have no real idea, certainly in California, and I understand in many other places, exactly how many people have this. Because my experience in San Diego was when I got to the hospital, the nurse, because there was a tent outside the hospital I was at, and she basically said, well, you know, we've examined you. I went through all the symptoms. I did a lot of tests. We think you're highly probable to have it, but we can't confirm it because we just haven't got enough test kits to definitely confirm it right now. And, you know, and I would say at least 90% of the cases in my area remain undiagnosed, and I understand why they do that. Because they were prioritizing people who were critically ill or at high risk. And I was not at high risk. I felt pretty bad with it, but I was not at high risk. So we don't really know how many cases are around. And, you know, I think we're, you know, we were talking about whether we're at the peak of this, and I think we may well be. And that's a good thing, hopefully, in the next week or so. But the estimates of actual cases are wildly disproportionate. Two other things I'd say really quickly, and then feel free to jump in. I've had experience, by the way, of being in other countries. You guys were talking about that. I was in China when SARS was on, so I know all about that, too, if you have any questions about that. The second three things I'd say very quickly, and one of them is positive. Right now, the virus doesn't appear to be mutating, which is a good thing. If you think about Spanish flu, that had three variants. The second strain was much worse than the first. Right now, it seems to be not mutating, and that's good because it's easier to find a vaccine for something if it's not mutating. One of the reasons we can't find a vaccine for the cold, for example, is because there are many colds. I mean, a coronavirus is a generic term. COVID-19 is one of them. And so there's that. And the third thing is, you know, I'd say is there's a description of symptoms, but that's a generic description. So, for example, after the initial fever, I went extremely cold. I was colder than I've ever been at any point before in my life. I mean, I wore three layers of clothing. And I thought, well, that doesn't make sense. It's not comparative with COVID-19. And then I read about a guy in Seattle who'd had exactly the same experience. He was diagnosed. I think he ended up being a hospital case. He was very sick with it. So There's a wide spectrum of symptoms connected with it. And those are the three points I think that your listeners might enjoy.
Now, what point did you, like, I guess, what happened, what were you feeling that led you to say, I need to go and get this checked out? Because I think, I can't speak for you, but, like, for me, especially now, I mean, this was, I think you made the post on March 23rd, so I'm guessing it was sort of a few days before that, but, you know, I wouldn't, so like a week before, so about the 16th, because, you know, I'm kind of the mindset where it's like, all right, I need to make sure I don't do anything stupid here, so I need to go to the hospital. Like, I don't want to fall and break my arm, because I break my arm, I go to the hospital, I'm going to come home with the fucking coronavirus. That's my mindset about it. So.
No, there were two things. I mean, first of all, the hospital where I was going, it had a special tent specifically for this, which was outside the hospital, and the nurses and doctors were all in full protective gear. And so the contagion, if you like, was outside the hospital. Only if you were, I think, become very critical, were you brought in for that specialist care. And I was not one of those patients. I had an elevated blood pressure, and I had a number of other things we want to go on to, a bit of congestion, breathing.
Yeah.
I think, to answer your question specifically, the reason I went is because it's kind of a slow burn, this thing. So it starts off like you feel a bit of a fever or a sore throat, then you may feel a bit of a cold. But the danger period, if you like, is about a week, about 7 or 8 days in. So, and then that's when you can have these breathing problems. I mean, this is generic, and I want to say this again, but specifically in my case, it felt a little bit like, you know, when I I climb mountains and things like that. We've talked about that before. But it felt a bit like I was climbing a mountain, only I was sat on my couch. Do you know what I mean?
Breathing
a little bit hard. And I thought, well, I don't want to go into that decline, because between 20 and 30% of patients have long-term lung damage, or their immune systems can overcompensate the virus and they can cause a collapse in the same way as the Spanish flu killed many younger people, much younger than me, because their immune systems overcompensated for it. So I was worried about that decline, so I thought I'd better get my lungs checked out. It was only when I went to the hospital. I didn't want to go when I was just another patient, if you know what I mean. But I thought if I might have some degenerative lung condition, then I needed to get checked out. And the nurse examined the lungs, and there was congestion there, but it wasn't deteriorating, or it didn't appear to be seriously congested. So I was released back to isolation, where I stayed until I came out of quarantine just recently.
All right, yeah, that makes sense. How was it? I've heard people describe it as like the worst flu they ever had. Would you go that far, or is it just like, I guess it all varies person to person. I can see why. I was saying way when we first started this show, I was at a big event, like right, I think on March 6th, and came home and felt sick like 5 days later, and I was like, oh shit, I've got it. That's when they had a huge outbreak here in Boston. So, but I was of the mindset, kind of like what happened with you, where it was like, okay, I kind of feel like shit, but let me, you know, I'm not going to do anything about this until I feel like maybe it's taken a really bad turn. And luckily, it never did. That was gone after a day, so I don't even think I really had it. But I guess, what was it worse than, like, the worst than the worst flu you ever had? That's how I've heard people describe it. I've heard all kinds of crazy. So some people say they have, like, crazy dreams and shit. You know, I'm just kind of interested. I don't know anyone who's experienced this.
Well, I didn't have crazy dreams. I did. It was like a flu, but it had important differences. So I'd say the body aches that I had seemed worse, and that freezing cold thing that I had, that temperature, I've never had off any flu, and I've never had ever before, even when I've had a few tropical conditions. I've never had that. That was really weird. And it kind of, I think at the end, not the effects, but the fatigue afterwards kind of lingered. And I was very, very tired, you know. Walking about or anything was a real effort. I mean, I'm making a full recovery now, you know. I'll be able to wander about. I want to say it's a happy tale for me. I'm fine. But there was a lingering fatigue. So it was extremely unpleasant. There was a couple of days where I thought, oh, I'm in really serious shit here. But only a couple of days. I wouldn't wish it on anyone. It was really unpleasant. But, you know, most people who get it, it's very, very, very unpleasant. But they will recover. They're not going to feel like that forever. And, you know, we all know the facts that people who are most likely to have it are people who suffer from it seriously, are people who have underlying medical conditions,
right,
who smoke really heavily, and who are very old. And that doesn't apply to most of your listeners. Maybe the smoking for some of them, but you know.
Some hosts or something might be like that, but I don't know any.
I'm thinking of you too. So you need to come back on that shit. But other than that...
Why do you think I haven't left the house in a fucking month?
Well, you'll have a bad time if you have it. I'm not going to say, oh, it's a breeze. For most people, it's unpleasant. I mean, there are these people who are asymptomatic, and you guys were talking about that. But I still think that they would be the minority of cases. It's not to dismiss the idea of it being asymptomatic, because... they are extremely serious, those people, if they go out shedding the virus, especially if they're extremely responsive. But most people will know they've got it, you know. And if you think you have a cold, then don't take the risk. Just say, well, maybe I have got it. You don't have to be on death's door to have it. People can be perfectly functional, just have a bit of a cold. I mean, and it can vary from age groups. My understanding is Prince Charles had COVID-19. Now, he's 71. And for him, as far as I can see, just like a bit of a cold, you know. You know. So if you feel like you've got that, man, just stay in for a few weeks. Don't take the risk for everybody else.
Yeah, exactly. Tyler, do you have any questions?
You know, the chills sound something like sepsis, where people have bacteria in the blood. How long did that last?
It's a good point, and that worried me as well. It lasted a few days.
Oh, okay, that's serious.
Yeah.
But it's gone now,
really,
so he's probably okay, right?
Oh,
it's
no,
gone
right
now, yes. But the thing is that with sepsis, what you find is that actually when you've got the signs and symptoms, usually it's over, that the blood has already, or the white cells in the blood have already filtered out the bacteria that have escaped. And so it's very intense, and then it goes away. To have it last for a couple of days, that's pretty incredible. That's something very unusual.
Yeah, it was very unusual, and that's why I mentioned it, because I wanted to mention it to Tim. It was a couple of days, definitely. So couple of days I was wearing three different shirts. I was really cold, and I've never had that before, and I was a bit worried. I did look up sepsis, and I was a bit worried about that.
Yeah, it could be it could be the end. So yeah, you shouldn't be worried.
That was one of the reasons why I went to hospital as well, the temperature thing and the breathing. But when they checked me, it was starting to go up. So they were not as concerned because I said to them, well, it's better than it was.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good. That was a good decision on your part because it could have been very important. You don't have much time. When this goes bad, as I understand it, it goes bad in a hurry.
Mm. Yeah. Now, Adam, were you – what was like, you're a more even-keeled guy than I am, so I guess you were probably like, oh, okay. But I feel like, were you frustrated when they said they couldn't test you? Because that part would like kind of irritate me. I have like OCD, so I'd be like, I need to fucking know. I need to know, okay? Don't give me this probable shit. I need to know one way or the other, so get one of your tests. This is why I pay health insurance. Get the test. So I get, like I said, you're more easygoing than I am. So, and I think that you weren't necessarily panicking about this. So, you kind of wanted to be on the safe side. But I guess, what were your feeling? What was your feeling when they were like, yeah, sorry, we can't test you?
There's a frustration there, but I think there's also a responsibility. Because once they checked my lungs out, and, we talked about the temperature just then, I was a bit relieved. Because I thought, well, I'm not going to have any long-term damage, ultimately. And then I thought afterwards, it's important that these things are actually used for people who are critical. There's only a certain amount of ventilators.
Right.
And it would be kind of selfish for me to insist on testing in this circumstance when I am clearly getting better. It just didn't feel appropriate to him. I think the third point I'd make, though, is subsequently when these – I mean, it's my understanding. I'm not a doctor, but it's my understanding that there might be some use for the antibodies in my body to be useful for blood plasma for people who are vulnerable, especially after a month or two.
Yeah, we talked about that last week, yeah.
Yeah, right. So I'd like to have that opportunity. Not because of the COVID-19 thing, it's tough for me, but there may be some value in having my blood used for antibodies for people, and I'd be quite happy to donate that. So if there were opportunities for me to do that, I would definitely do it.
Yeah. I was mostly being sarcastic. I would forever complain about it when I got home, but I would handle things the same way that you did. But yeah, it is frustrating. You wish, and they can't, as far as you know, right, you can't go get a test to get cleared. Because the other stuff I wanted to talk to you about, in a sense, was like that you're also impacted by this financially and everything, because a lot of your work's being squashed out just because of the pandemic around you, not even having to do with what you went through. So is there any – I guess you probably are keeping an eye on it, but is there any indication of any way you can be tested to, as we've been talking about earlier, this whole idea of, like, bringing people back online, people who have had it, who can now go out and reenter society, as dystopian as that sounds. Do you have any insight on sort of that process at all?
No, I don't. I mean, and that's a good question. Maybe that can be something that you can look at as part of these shows. I mean, you're certainly right. I have lost 60% of my income. I'm a teacher and I do some teaching online now. But 60% is gone. There are people in a lot worse condition than me. I have a roof over my head. I have food over my table. I am not starving. You know, I've released my new book and maybe I'll sell a few of those when all this is over. So I live, at least for now, and I'm not unemployed now. Many people are, and there's going to be a lot of suffering as a result of this. So if there's some good that can come out of it, that would be great, and I'll volunteer anybody to take my blood plasma who's in the medical facility if they want to, if it will help people and they're obviously reputable, then I'd be happy to donate that. If it can do some good, then I'm up for it. I've not been unusually to any tropical places for the last few years. So I could donate blood, and I haven't got any conditions that would mean my blood would be excluded. So maybe I can do that. I don't know. There's obviously all these wider impacts. There's the psychological and the financial impacts when people start coming out of their homes into the real world. There's going to be a lot of healing that people have to do, and different communities are impacted differently. If you're a member of an ethnic minority, say for example in Chicago, your community is much more likely to have been hit than say a rural community in Maine. So there's geographic things as well as community, and it's sporadic and patchy. I've spoken to some people in North America, I mean, hence one of the reasons I made that post about it not being a conspiracy theory, who are completely unscathed by this. They don't know anyone who's ever had it. Their communities are fairly normal. You know, business is largely unaffected. But if you come here to San Diego, the place is in lockdown, and rightly so, because we've had cases. So people need to understand that they are part of a wider community, and there is various degrees of suffering and impact here. But we're all hopefully in it together, and you know, you can choose to be selfish or you can choose to help your fellow person, and you make that choice as individuals. And I feel generally encouraged by most people trying to make positive contributions to this rather than negative ones.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's been one of the great silver linings of all this is the sense of community, you know, across the country, people responding to this. And it's really interesting. It's not to get biblical, but here we are on a Good Friday. It's like the meek shall inherit the earth. It's all the people that were often overlooked before all this are saving our society, essentially. The doctors, the nurses, the first responders, and the janitors, the grocery people.
Yeah.
I mean, those folks were, you know, really overlooked, and they're on the front lines. They're integral to this entire process, and they're heroes. And it's like I would never consider, like, what 3 months ago going to the grocery store, I never would have considered like the 15-year-old kid ringing up my combos to be a hero. But now he is, man. He's been drafted. That's the wildest part of this. It's these folks have been, you know, unwittingly drafted into this so-called war, if you will. I'm not entirely comfortable with that analogy, but they've been drafted into the war against the virus. So it's a part of this that I never would have imagined.
I think that what they're doing, I mean, you know, they're taking a risk on a daily basis. They're far more exposed than you and I, and they're making a choice, and they're obviously not the best paid people in the community. So hero can be a generic term sometimes. You can call soccer players heroes in Britain when you think, well, actually, they're just very talented and gifted individuals. But hero is often, when it's specific, is applied to how individuals deal with personal traumas and crisis to the best of their ability. And if you are in this situation and you're facing real risk and you turn up every day knowing you have that risk and you're the best person, you're the best you can be in that circumstance. So if you're in the grocery store, you're the best you can be knowing that risk. That term hero is, I think, appropriate, because that person is taking risks for other people knowing that they themselves could suffer. What's hero or heroine?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, and it's funny in a way, because you kind of mentioned it, like soccer players, and a lot of people do hold athletes and musicians and celebrities up as heroes, but I think this entire event has, you know, maybe it's a wake-up call to people around the world in a way, where it's these people we hold up on pedestals, and some of them are helping out, and they're donating, and that's great, and they're trying to organize stuff.
Yeah.
To get through this, and God bless them, and I salute them for that. But the idea that it goes back to the old idea where it's like, the firemen and the doctor and the nurse and the teacher, those are the people we should be holding up and celebrating and wanting to emulate, and those are the everyday heroes. And LeBron James and Shakira, I don't know. that's how hip I am. Lady Gaga's putting together some big concert, but Shakira.
Shakira.
But yeah, maybe it's a wake up call in a sense, add some perspective to the way we look at things in the world.
I hope so. I mean, there are some positives that can come out of it. Not to say entertainers don't have a place. It's important to make people happy.
Right.
And they have a role. I never understood why we might see them as little gods, because they're not. They're just entertainers. So if that's a readjustment to society that becomes a long-term one, and I think that's a good thing. I think, you know, that's good. Yeah.
And I mean, I don't know what kind of classes you teach, but my mom's an elementary school teacher, and I notice I've seen a lot of posts from people who are now working from home and they have their kids at home. An appreciation for teachers now that parents don't have that government mandated free preschool or free place to send their kids every day, and they have to deal with all that. They kind of have an understanding of what teachers have to go through when they're dealing with an eight-year-old and a 13-year-old for the whole day. It's problematic.
For a month on end.
Tired.
what's
that?
I said for at least a month or 2 months on end, 7 days a week. Yeah. It made me laugh actually because there's been rain unusually in San Diego. You know what this place is like. There's been rain unusually in San Diego for a few days, and the moment the fingers of sunlight swept across the sky, I saw small children in their gardens, of course, observing isolation as though desperate parents said, "Right now, get outside." So that's true. Mm-hmm.
Well, I know you're kind of fatigued, and I only wanted to take up a half hour of your time. Tyler, do you have any other questions for Adam?
You know, one thing that you might want to be on the lookout for is there may be a move afoot to try to put together a registry of people who have had a COVID diagnosis or think that they had it, because there will be antibody tests coming, and then they can go ahead and decide who might be able to donate serum, plasma, to patients in need. So I think that might be something we see in the near future, so you have
to keep a lookout.
I think that's a great point. And if you see any of information like that, Tim, please put it on your website as well, because I would definitely like to do that. We talked about positives coming out of this, attitude, respect for people who are worthy of it. And also, we can actually have that opportunity now to help others in need. And you know, I know people who are involved in the coronavirus are looking for a vaccine right now. And so hopefully we'll try and get a vaccine out as soon as possible, or they will, rather. So there are some positives to think about. Yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, Adam didn't. This is all me, folks. So don't hate on Adam. But he has a new book out. So where can folks get the new book? Because they can, you know, maybe you can help model a little bit, folks. You just said he's taking a hit from this, as a lot of people have. But we've got Adam here. So where can people get the new book, and where can they find it and stuff like that? And tell us a little bit about it.
Well, please don't feel – I don't want to feel like I'm plugging my new book.
No. I told you. This is on me. I'm trying to pay it forward.
Okay,
you came on this show. You bare your soul about your experience here with this. I want to see if we can help you out at all. That's all. So what's –
No, I appreciate that. Okay, so my new book is you can find it on Amazon.com. It's Extreme Expeditions 3,
Bigfoot versus the Yeti. It talked about my adventures in an uninhabited part of Alaska. It was a show recently on Alaska's Triangle, which was called The Hairy Man of Port Chatham. But there's a lot behind that actual story. It's a really creepy story. There's the Yeti in Nepal, one of the films I did with Josh Gates in the Expedition Unknown series. There's many other adventures across the United States. So I talk about those and some very weird things, including that portal story. I talk about that.
Oh, it's in the book?
It's
in the portal.
Book,
oh, so, shit.
Including analysis of it and my subsequent conclusions, which you will find extremely interesting. So all of that.
Oh, nice.
That's Bigfoot versus the Yeti, and that's on Amazon. If people want to get it, please feel free.
Right, right. And like I said, that's on me, folks. I'm being a shameless friend, actually.
I'm being a shameless friend and
trying to help Adam out. So you can tell because I'm afraid I made you uncomfortable. I apologize for that. But
no, you did not, man. You're doing it for the right reasons. You're doing it for the right reasons, and I appreciate it. You've always been my very good friend for so many years, and I thank you for it, Tim.
Well, like I said, I appreciate you coming on here and sharing your story, and like I said, if we can put a face to this for some of the listeners who may be on the fence or maybe skeptical, it's like, you guys know Adam Davies. So, I mean, come on. This is, as I said at the start of the show, this is as real can be. This is not a made-for-TV movie. It's not fake. It's not a conspiracy. So I'm thrilled that you're on the mend.
Okay.
I hope that continues and you're totally fine very soon. And you know, good luck with what happens next. I wish that on everybody. We'll all see what happens next. But you know, I'll be pulling for you, and I'll be in touch as the days and weeks go by, buddy.
Yeah. Thank you, Tim. It's lovely to talk to you again, and lovely to speak to both of you guys. And things are. I'm positive at the moment that things are going to take a turn for the better sooner rather than later. I'm hopeful, and certainly for me. Although, like many people, I've had a massive drop in income. None of these things last forever.
Right.
This will go away. This will go away, and hopefully, we'll have a better community spirit if there's one positive out of it. So let's hope for that.
Absolutely. All right, brother. Good night, and be safe out there.
Thank you, man. Thank you, guys. I'll speak
to
you soon. Take care.
All right. Well, that was Adam Davies. I appreciate that he jumped in to talk about it. Like I said, I stumbled upon that. I stumbled upon that post on his Facebook page, and I was surprised. That was the first person I knew who even has been tangentially touched by this, much less a possible case or a probable case. So,
well,
it's interesting.
You know, it is interesting that this is a person who is very active and fit. And he got hit pretty hard. It's another one of those things that the agent is very unpredictable. He had a very good sense, though, of we don't have a good numeric sense of how many people are asymptomatic. And so if you look, this is something that we've really got to get nailed down in a hurry. Hopefully the antibody test will allow us to do that. People are talking 25%, but really – he's absolutely correct. We don't know. By the way, he's one of the very few, maybe the first person that I've spoken to that knew about the 1918 killer flu and how it evolved. You know, that the first wave was different from the second wave. Not many people know that.
Yeah. Well, he's a very sharp guy. So, but he seemed very, very up to speed on pandemics. Which
very much.
I don't know if that was. I should have asked him when he was on the show. I don't know if that was a byproduct of being swept up in this one, or if that was something he already knew. But I do think I can kind of echo what he was saying there towards the end. I don't know if it's the situation in New York with them with what seems to be a flattening of the curve, or if it's just that this has gone on for so long that. It feels like we have to be turning a corner soon, but I do get that feeling. I get that feeling that that we may be turning a corner, and that may not necessarily mean we're at the end of the road. That just may mean we're turning the corner, and there's another corner coming up 2, 3, 4 months down the line. But at the very least, it feels like we're turning a corner. And it's very interesting. I joked with you about this, in a sense, at the end of the show last week, the how all the commercials have turned into coronavirus commercials. Did you notice? Did you look for this since we talked about it last week?
Once you set me on that quest, sure enough. Chance favors the prepared mind.
It's so depressing. But the interesting thing I find, and this is maybe something to kind of keep an eye out for Tyler and listeners too, is this week I think was the first time I got the sense that there's kind of been a switch in the minds of many people. No pun intended, the initial, 3-4 weeks, it was very novel. That's the no pun intended. There was a novelty to all this. There was, now we're working from home, and now everyone's doing video conferences, and there was sort of a newness to all this. And this week was the first time that I sort of got the sense that people had started to settle into this situation that we're in. Maybe it's because I think we're all in agreement that we're essentially going to sit out April as a society. So maybe people came to that conclusion mentally in that first week of April and were like, well, hey, this is it for the next 3 weeks, so I might as well get used to it. But it certainly feels to me in the zeitgeist that we as a people have somehow begun to weirdly adapt to this lifestyle that we've been forced into. Does that make any sense?
No, it does. It does. People will accommodate. They will maybe become numb. The only thing I can relate it to in my life is during the Vietnam War, they used to announce the casualties every Thursday. And that was something where they actually used to say light at the end of the tunnel, and it just got darker and darker and darker. And there was this fatalistic thing that actually I can remember some of my friends, people who were a few years older than me, got caught up in the draft and ended up over there. And there was this sense that this train's coming. I can't do anything about it. Fine. You do just kind of maybe it's resignation. I don't know what the right word is. But accommodation for sure, a feeling that, okay, it's going to be a while, get used to it for sure must be part of that.
And there's a certain part of it, too, that is, in a sense, kind of uplifting in a way, where we're adapting to this, and you're seeing that indomitable human spirit emerge, which is the uplifting part. People are – there's like new creativity coming out of this situation. People are taking the situation we're in and they're making the most out of it or the best of it via all kinds of, quirky videos or musical performances from orchestras where everybody's at their house playing and it's all on – that kind of thing. It's – that to me – That's one of the positive things, I guess you could say. It's a sign of there's not despair, there's hope, and that's all we can really bank on right now is hope. So, that's exemplified by how even the creatives, they're not giving up. They're finding a way to adapt to this new world so that they can make their art, and that's a good thing. That's uplifting.
Yeah, there. I think you're right. There is hope. And we have to remind ourselves of that when things seem really bleak. It would be nice if we could finish this off in 2 weeks. I don't believe it's going to go that way. And we'll have to resign ourselves to a much longer haul. And keeping our guard up, being careful, all those things are going to have to become second nature for a while. And we hope
exactly.
We'll, eventually we'll get past this. And there's not going to be a miracle that's going to come from the sky and save us. We'll get past it anyway.
Absolutely, yeah. So I do. That's probably my next point of concern, I guess you could say, going towards, as we look towards the future, the at some point, people, and that's the other part. You're seeing people adapt to it, but you're also seeing people start to crack up a little bit. And I think you're going to see more people crack up, and you just hope that they don't do anything stupid in the midst of cracking up. I think there was a case somewhere in America, I don't know where, but somewhere in America, somebody was going to go shoot up a hospital because of all this. And it's like, no, dude, they caught the guy. But it's like, this is the fucking last thing we need right now. Everyone just yeah. Stay home. Like, please, for the love of God. But I'm afraid that we may see some crack ups as we get closer. I think what we talked about earlier is going to get more. It's going to get more passionate, this debate about what to do next. And all we can do is, all we can do, you, me, listeners, is sit back and kind of voice our opinions and go with what happens. We don't really have any, you know, do what's best for you, folks. That's kind of the whole idea.
Yeah, and hopefully there'll be an accommodation in terms of balancing the science and the knowledge such as it is. Remember, it's imperfect with other needs. We're going to have a lot of costs to pay. More than the obvious ones, things that will become clear later. And so the legacy of this will hold on for a while. But hopefully, and I think we all have to remain hopeful, is that the people that have maybe specific knowledge or could render a more informed opinion will be at least listened to. We may not be able to, or politically we may decide that we can't necessarily do the perfect in terms of what would be perfect scientifically, or the scientific consensus would be, but we have to find something that's reasonable.
A middle ground between all this,
the art of politics.
Absolutely. Well, hopefully they can do that. Now, this person in the 469 area has been on hold since before we brought Adam on, so let's get them on the show right now. So 469 area code, you're on the air. What's going on? What can we talk to you about?
You can talk with me about anything you like, Tim. This is Steve Ray, and it's a pleasure to listen.
All right. What's going on, Steve? To what do we owe the pleasure of your call? You've tweeted us a lot lately, so it's hard to keep up with all your tweets. So is there something particularly pressing on your mind this week you'd like to discuss?
Nothing too much. First, though, Tyler was able to track the genome, how the New York cases came from Europe. That's awesome. I'm glad he was able to do that. That sounds great.
Tyler didn't do it.
Published.
Published.
Okay. It I didn't think that. Yeah, not that he did, but nextstrain.org. Here is a great resource. You can really drill down on that. Anyway, Shelby went to Care Now recently just for getting like some glass out of her foot, and she says that over the phone they asked her if she had symptoms. Care Now is a doc in the box, like a just a small local clinic chain. I presume y'all are familiar with it.
What you're talking about, not necessarily.
Okay.
I've never heard of a private chain like that, but yeah, we have one in my town. An emergency, essentially like an emergency. It probably is a private company, but like an emergency room only type.
It's place. It's not the emergency room. It's non-emergency care in a private chain. Anyway, she had some glass in her foot from dropped a glass during the quarantine. And they asked her over the phone if she had any COVID-type symptoms. She got there. There's no one in the waiting room. They don't open the door for you. They have to open it special. It's locked. And the person was in, full protective gear and took her temperature with one of those scanners, wireless temporal scanners, before they let her in. So that is how, just as general news of how medical folks are coping with it. And as to your stovetop issue,
thank you. Yeah,
sure. As to your stovetop, what I saw at the post office recently is they had a cheap plastic shower curtain liners, and hanging from above the counter where you buy your stamps, or say I've got a package, those are hanging down. You just reach through them. So what you could do, just go to Walmart or the the gas station or whatever, any place that sells shower curtain liners, and have the guy come in through like that through the patio and just wall off everything except the kitchen. Maybe cover everything in the kitchen, use saran wrap or tape so that he only enters just that little bubble. And then because Tyler, I think, can confirm that the coat sticks really well to plastic. So if you make him just a one little plastic niche, sort of a cyst of protection to protect your sweet, wonderful mom, then that's just one thing to clean. You can just pull all the plastic out and throw it away. COVID loves plastic. Saran wrap for the cracks. What do you think about that?
There you go.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not a bad idea.
No.
Is anything you can do to improve that design, Tyler?
No, it sounds good.
Okay, well, there you go. There's something you could do. And then you just throw everything away afterwards, so you don't have to scrub the floors or the tile until it's gone.
No, but you still need to disinfect, like, the stovetop and shit and everything. Well, I'll see if he wears gloves and everything.
But that's one thing. That's like, then you only have to disinfect a stovetop instead of, like, all the carpet from him walking through the front door and all that stuff. Yeah, just as a OCD thing, you'll be minimizing your did I scrub it enough, your Lady Macbeth burden.
He might have just saved your life, Tim.
He may have saved by a shower curtain.
They've got to be good for something. And, well, those are pretty much my only salient points. There's only a bit of time left. Got any questions for me? If not, I'll just, like, leave you with this good stuff. You can have dessert and nothing but dessert.
There you go. Well, I'll keep Steve on for this. I was going to tell you this story, Tyler. So to update everyone on my quarantining, I was really good this week. I did not actually even go into – I never left my car, essentially. I did leave the house for an incredibly indulgent treat, which I highly recommend.
Combos?
If there's one. What's that?
Combos or like a big Lobo growler?
No, better. I highly recommend this. There's a chain. They have one in my town. Nothing Bundt Cakes. Do they have these near you?
I've seen those.
Oh, they're
so
good.
Those in Dallas.
They make these little – they make a whole variety of Bundt Cakes, but they make these little cupcake-sized ones called Buntinis. And you can get a dozen of them.
Did any make it
and
home?
What's that?
Did any of them make it home, or did you just come back with 12 empty cups and a bunch of crumbs?
No, they made it home. And the great part is I did this actually with the local brewery has the same deal. So on last Saturday, I just went online, booked my beer and Buntinis, and drove to the brewery, pushed my ID against the glass of my driver window. The man saw it, he put the beer in my trunk. I drove to Nothing Bundt Cakes and called them. They came out, put the bundts in my trunk, and off I went back to my house. Never touching anyone, never interacting with anyone, and with a slew of beer and Bundt Cakes. So
was this Lord Hobo?
Actually,
is that
literally, honestly, the extent of my – yes, it was Lord Hobo, yes.
But I heard, like, they make great – what's your favorite beer, Lord Hobo?
It's Freebird Ale. I'm actually drinking it right now. It's a very light 5.5% alcohol. I could drink a million of them, and it takes me a while to really feel it. So,
how much is a growler? So, like, these growlers to grow, is that, like, 50 bucks, 20 bucks?
I think they were like 16. Something. They didn't have any growlers though. They only had beer packaged. So,
okay,
which is
a great
fine.
Deal. Cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
So it's kind of neat. I'm a fan of. As I said this before on the show or earlier, it's like this is kind of what my lifestyle was like before. I was a very shelter in place situation. I worked from home and everything else. So to me, the idea that I could drive to the brewery and then the cake shop and get all the ridiculous indulgences I need for WrestleMania, that's why, because it was WrestleMania last weekend, it was delightful. I don't have to interact with anyone. This is fantastic. I just order it all online, and they put it in my trunk when I pull up.
You're now a professional misanthrope.
Exactly. This is one. Well, this is one change to society I hope lasts. I hope it stays after all this. Curbside,
do what you
curbside
love.
Pickup
no one will
is
follow.
Fantastic. Yeah.
I
should have got a sponsorship.
Funhouse?
What's that?
How was the Firefly Funhouse on WrestleMania? That looked intriguing. I didn't watch it, but it looked very intriguing.
You can probably watch it on YouTube. It was interesting. It was like more of a long skit than an actual wrestling match.
Well,
you'd like it, I think.
Can't
it was very Poppy-esque.
Skit.
What's that?
Ooh, it's, and very nice. And Poppy, she's still representing Shirai, at least with theme music.
Yes, and she's
Shirai.
A regular character. A fairly regular performer. Not a wrestler or anything, but who knows with her. So,
it's that's very impressive. I'm glad to see that our worlds have come into even ever closer alignment.
Exactly.
Cool.
Now, are you in? What's your quarantine situation like? How are you? Is it tense? Is it not tense? But is it like strict down there in Dallas, as far as what they want you to do and what they would prefer you not to do?
No, it's like I've heard some rumors about like the borders, like border towns, like around Laredo, which is near Mexico, and possibly some folks near Juarez, which is near both Mexico and New Mexico, and also Louisiana.
What's going on?
It's what's going on.
Turn your radio off, sir. That's an old Art Bell moment there. Turn your radio down, please.
It's I wanted to hear your voice so much it came out of both the phone and the laptop. I apologize for that. Anyway, Dallas itself is not very strict. They say everyone pretty much stay closed, but businesses, you can call the business and the guy's there, and he'll just open the door for you. So there's like one guy in the store, so it's like, I'm not open. There's an appointment. So stuff is like sort of leaking through, like some commerce is leaking through, and as the whole the country going back to work, I think it's going to be sort of like the AIDS crisis where people slowly learn that that bareback in the butt will kill you, but bareback oral will not. I think we're just going to learn experimentally what will and will not kill us. And
on a very crude level, that I understand exactly what you mean. Yeah, so we're going to have to adapt.
We will adapt and learn. To thy own self be true.
I'll ask you about this, Steve. I do want to mention this because we've talked on the show in the past about this affects everybody, right? And one thing that struck me, and I suppose strippers, and I apologize, Tyler, this is going to be a tad adult here, but the intriguing, interesting sort of part is. The sex workers are just as much impacted by all this as everybody else. And so that's a subset of society that people don't consider. So I'm not saying go out and patronize your local prostitute, but it's, it's an interesting sort of situation.
The live strip clubs have been shut down in Dallas. Prostitutes are switching to like their best regulars and limiting contact to just they'll have like a top one or two client and sticking with them. Like older and if the client can afford good medical care and is taking care of themselves, then like you're minimizing your risk. You are having you're like a concierge 7-Eleven. It's like you only see one customer. You do see the customer.
Right.
You don't really have the distancing, but it's just one. And it's, set at them. So all people shouldn't necessarily go out and seek, prostitutes who have an impact. You can't seek cam girls, webcam girls, or phone sex operators. That's a totally good way of being intimate with people you barely know and also maintaining social distancing. I'm sure people are switching.
That's actually true. I did not even think of that. Yeah. Yeah. That's one of those, that's a career that is. I bet you is seeing an uptick in business. Very interesting. See, this is why we take callers, folks, because, where else would we have even stumbled upon the idea that in this quarantined world that cam girls are at a premium. So
they're another superstar of the pandemic.
In their own way, sure. I'll give them that. In their own way, sure.
In as much as grocery clerks.
No, because grocery clerks are actually interacting with people. Cam girls are behind the cam. They're not taking as much
risk. Right,
but they're
diffusing the pressure that might lead people to go out and call up ex-girlfriends or take other desperate, less social distance measures. It's different than the grocery workers.
There you go. Yeah.
All right, we all have our role to play.
Word.
All right, Steve. Well, thank you so much for calling in.
I hereby voluntarily leave. You don't have to break that fourth wall with me. Nice to talk to you again, Tyler. Talk to you all later.
Yeah, thanks for calling.
Jesus. He just hung up. So that was interesting. I didn't mean to put you in an awkward spot there, Tyler, but Steve, he's knowledgeable about those ways. So he used to be He used to be Dallas's premier strip club reviewer, so he's.
Oh, whoa!
Yeah, he's colorful. Yeah, so he has an understanding of that underground world. And to me, like I said, it dawned on me where it's like, oh shit, not just like prostitutes, but you know, I don't necessarily know if my heart bleeds for drug dealers, but certainly drug addicts. There's all kinds of issues that people don't think about. Until you're not supposed to leave your house. So there'll be a million
ways to pay this price. You know, everybody will do it in their own way.
Absolutely. We're pretty much at the end of the show. Another one's flown by. I want to thank everybody actually who has written and participated. If you're down, I'm down. We'll come back next week. You in, Tyler?
Yeah, why not? I'm not going anywhere.
All right. Yeah, same here. I don't know if I'll even break quarantine this weekend, but if I do, I'll have an update on the show next week. It's interesting. I joke this is kind of like my therapy, and I was really worried going into this week, but I think it's as bad as we thought it was going to be, but the world didn't fall apart. So I guess that's the saving grace of it, and it's kind of horrifying in a way that we've become used to this, but I suppose when your options are get used to it or the world falls apart, I guess getting used to it is the best option you have, because as I joked on the show last week, that they're not going to come out tomorrow and say if you drink a can of Dr. Pepper, this is going to go away. So this isn't going to go away. We're in the shit now.
Yes.
And we'll see how long it takes us to get out of the shit. But we're in it. Oh, and I want – yeah, that's kind of – I lost my train of thought. But I want to thank the – I said to Tyler a couple weeks ago, kind of debating how long we're going to do this. It seemed like people were a little put off just because they were just coroned out. But in the last week or so, I've heard from just a lot of people who are listening now. Maybe it's the fact that we've been doing these shows on the regular every Friday night. You know, and they've kind of – they realized it wasn't a one-off, but a lot of people are listening, and so, you know, I appreciate that. I hope that we're providing some kind of insight, and, you know, it's, I guess, far from a distraction because we're talking about the same thing everybody else is, but at least a different perspective, maybe some laughs in some way at some point, you know, and some insights – and some hope that we're all, you know, that we're all in this together. That's kind of the mantra that we've been hearing throughout all this. We're in this together, you know, we're going to make it, man. We're going to get through this. So,
yeah.
I think that's about it. Anything else, Tyler?
Well, no, you know, we've been very lucky that the people that are responsible for healthcare at every level, doctors, nurses, and all the support people, we've been very fortunate that they have had some major problems in terms of equipment and concerns and worries. And
absolutely.
They're still on the job. They're still doing their jobs. And they have to be exhausted. I mean, just without the extra element of, you know, am I going to get sick? Am I going to get my family sick? And they're still on the job. How about that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's it crosses my mind more than once a day, that's for sure, that these people who are literally on the very front lines, their experiences are unfathomable. I think that's probably the only way I can put it. You know, it's absolutely like nightmarish conditions. And
yeah.
As you said, they're exhausted. They are, death is around them at all times. It's nightmarish, man. It's absolutely nightmarish. And my heart goes out to them. I worry about what it's going to be like after this is all said and done. A lot of them are going to really need some time and some help to decompress from this experience. I'm sure of that. And I hope that they do. Because what they're going through right now, as I said, is absolutely, it's unfathomable. That's the part where it is, you know, we are in a war. They're in a war with this. And we're all doing our best to support them. So.
Yes.
But we're going to get there. We're going to get there. There's light at the end of the tunnel. People need to hang in there. Most importantly, they need to be safe. They need to be safe for themselves, and they need to be safe for the people around them. I think that's kind of the big thing. And if we all stick to that mindset, and if you're all responsible, and we're all responsible, we've begun to put the work in. That's probably the best way to put it. We've begun to put the work in. We're undoubtedly going to have another 3 weeks of this, of everyone pretty much shutting down society through April. And we'll see where we're at as we go along, and we'll see where we're at the end of the month, and hopefully we'll have some way of delineating what might come next. But who knows?
Well, there's reason to believe that we're succeeding.
What's that?
We're making it. There's reason to believe that what we're doing is succeeding. So let's keep doing it.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. That's. Yeah, that's one of the big feelings I came out of the week with. And I think they said that a few weeks ago, that if we do this, then we'll see when it's working. And now we're starting to see that it's working. So now we have to let it do its job. Now we have to let this play out. You can't go, oh, it's starting to work. Let's stop. We need to stick with it, at least for the next few weeks, and see where we're at there. It's very frustrating, in a sense, this whole experience, because you really are at the mercy of this virus. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it's a day by day process. So you never know. It's very slow moving. It's a slow moving disaster. But hey, that's what we're dealing with, and we're all gonna. Pull our straws up by our bootstraps and see and do our best to get through it. That's about all you can say, right?
Right.
All right, Tyler, I'm taking up enough of your time. You're lucky you still have an evening ahead of you out there in Arizona. So go watch a movie or relax or read a book or something. Enjoy yourself and have a great weekend. And I will talk to you next Friday night, brother.
Okay.
Good night, folks.